The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
There's some weirdness regarding the tenure of a coach we all seem to like and mostly all agreed should have been fired. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. How are you? Wherever you're listening, I appreciate you coming here for your college football conversation each day. It's 2 hours. Been doing it since the beginning of the 14th season. About to put a birthday candle on the cake. We will turn 8, so yay for us. Nine states, 56 sticks. That number isn't right anymore. We have added, and so I will get the additional math. Well, it should be 57. Who said it's only one? So anyway, I said, hey, there's a coach we all seem to like. And most of us also would have agreed, yeah, you should fire him. Here's the weirdness about it, though. I believe all of us, the collective college football fan public, I believe we would all collectively view Ed Orgeron's time as LSU head coach more positively if he had not won a national title, but instead had left the program in better shape, like roster-wise, off-the-field issue-wise, reputation-wise, organization, all of that-wise, financial-wise. I think we would view Ed Orgeron's time as LSU head coach in a better light if it were just more normal and less extreme, even without a national championship. Here's more weirdness for him. Ed Orgeron was head coach at LSU for most of 6 seasons. Now, he didn't coach, I think, it was the first month of September in 16. He did coach the rest of the 2021 season, even after he'd been fired, so those games count. He didn't coach a full complement of games in 2020. In 2019, they played 15. So it's a weird way to get to 71 games. But COVID, taking over, all that stuff, whatever. But it's basically 6 seasons and 71 games. Am I right? 6 seasons of 12 games per would be 72. So, again, it's a real strange way to get to almost the number you would have, but that's what it is. So it's basically 6 years, 51 and 20. Do you know what that equals? At LSU, SEC West, 8-4, 9-3. Consistently, 8-4, 9-3 for 6 seasons at an SEC West school. That's impressive. It's not good enough at LSU. 8-4, 9-3. You can make a living. Well, not at LSU. That's not good enough, and it shouldn't be. They're LSU. There are places where you can look at it and go, they're fill in the blank. They're USC. Be better. I can have expectations, and I've never even been on your campus. I don't know Mike Garrett or any of the other ADs that have – I don't – but I can have expectations because of who you are. So when I say 8-4, 9-3 consistently for 6 seasons at an SEC West school, at first blush, what is that? Pretty impressive. It's not good enough because it's not at an SEC West school. It's at LSU. And it's certainly not good enough when so much of the success was concentrated over 4 months in 2019. So here's the weirdness. The weirdness comes from if the team actually had gone either 8-4 or 9-3 every one of those 6 seasons, and if watching each week, they appeared pretty 8-4 or 9-3. pretty buttoned up, pretty tough, pretty good, pretty careful with the ball, you know, all of this stuff. They're pretty good at all of it. And each week when you watch them, they look kind of 8-4, 9-3. And the positives of attaining an 8-win or 9-win season in the SEC West were clearly there. If it had been just 8-4, 9-3, well, it's just not good enough. It's really good, but it's just not good enough for LSU. If it had just been that, I believe LSU and likely all of us would have looked at Coach O possibly the way Texas viewed Tom Herman. I think this is fair evaluation. You haven't embarrassed us. You haven't ruined all the recruiting relationship. You drove the program into the ground. I never heard any of that about Tom Herman. You know what I heard about Tom Herman at Texas? Well, he just don't want you as coach anymore. And everybody looks at Tom, there's nothing about you left dysfunction in your wake and the next guy has to clean up your mess. It wasn't that. It was, don't want you as coach. No one labeled the Texas program as out of control or the team as unprepared or questioned the basics of how Tom Herman hired his coordinators. Do you recall questioning the basics of how Ed Orgeron hired coordinators? Folks, he hired his OC without meeting him. That's supposed to be made up. It's not. So when Texas looked at Tom Herman, all they had was, you know what? Just don't want you to be the head coach anymore. We think there is more. I got to say, folks, when Auburn moved on from Gus and they fired him, when Gary Pinkel on his own said, I'm out, I retire. When Mark Richt was, what did he call it? Mutual agreement. When Mark Richt and Georgia had a mutual agreement that he wouldn't coach there anymore. Whatever, folks. Do you realize how normal it is for a coach to no longer be there, to be removed by whatever method? And you never hear a word any of those places about big picture issues. It was just, yeah, it's time. Auburn looked at Gus Malzahn and thought, yeah, it's time. You looked at Gary Pinkel, who retired as the school's all-time winningest coach. And people in Como, coach, love you. It's time. Nobody looked at Pinkel as got to run him out the door, driving this thing into the ground. And you know another big difference between Coach O and Gary Pinkel, Gus, Mark Richt, and a lot of others? O won a national title. And we still look at him with, well, what kind of shape did he leave it in? Folks, this is a perfect example of how we are always obsessed with what is next, with what is coming. Years ago, I was at the 2005 SEC championship game. I believe it was 05. And Georgia upset LSU, knocked Jamarcus Russell out of the game, had a block punt, I believe. I believe that was 05. And so the next day in the local paper, after the team in Athens won the SEC championship, DJ Shockley was the MVP of the game, the quarterback for Georgia. I opened the sports section of the local paper. The first thing is about the next guy. Hey, there's this kid in high school in Dallas named Matt Stafford. He's on his way to Georgia. Bulldog fans couldn't get enough, and I literally am looking on the page right next to it. Oh, yeah, and this guy just won an SEC title for you. Not interested. What's next? It is the most bizarre thing in sports. Who's the next coach? Who's the next player? Who's the next quarterback? Ed Orgeron, for everything you can say about him, dropped 6 years in Baton Rouge into a fishbowl. Do you know what happened? He walked away with a national championship. It is not supposed, that is supposed to be the mark in time. Hey, that was 2 years before the national championship. Oh, yeah, that was 10 years after the national championship. That's how big that thing is. And it has colored our perception of his time there. because of the shape he sort of left things in off the field, and scandal and reputation and monetary settlements and the portal and all the players leaving and all of this. In what? Because it will make Brian Kelly's job of winning a national championship tougher? Folks, Ed just gave you one. It is the strangest thing about sports fans. Absolutely. So, yeah, a lot of weirdness with how we view Ed Orgeron right now. All right, it's Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. More college football conversation next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY. And there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and the mark in time. It was just a couple of weeks ago that we started, because we play a couple of times a show. We'll have an audio clip from somebody associated with the game. And occasionally it is Greg Sankey, and we're at media days. Occasionally it's, I don't know, Dan's been out of the practice somewhere. But until about 2 weeks ago, it was all off-season stuff. It was all spring practice, et cetera. Then we got the Norvell stuff because they're week zero. Well, now everybody's been back for about a week and a half. And so you're having this, some shakeout in the SEC in particular when it comes to quarterback jobs. There were five open jobs. And, yes, I told you. Monday before Eli said, Brady Cook. And that's just a perfect example because Missouri is not a player this – actually, no, they're a player. They're not a player this season. They're looking at six wins or seven wins, and let's get a 13th game. That's kind of the goal, I believe. But with the right quarterback, they're good enough to beat somebody, and they're good enough to affect things. If they make the wrong choice at quarterback, well, then they're probably not, and maybe Eli's not choosing things next year. I don't know. But it's the most important position, and it's the most important decision, and it will affect the entire SEC and maybe even the national championship race. If Auburn picks the right quarterback and that kid's able to upset Georgia or Bama, Auburn can't win the SEC title. They can't win the West. Can't win the national championship, but they can affect it. I want to welcome on right now a guy who knows all about the SEC, and we're going to go through some of these quarterback battles. You can hear him on ESPN Radio, of course, with Athlon Sports, but he is the owner, the man in charge, 440sports.com. It is Braden Gall. Brother, how are you today?
Yeah, man. 440 Sports on the YouTube page, all SEC football content all the time, lots of good stuff up there. So I'm ready to go, man. We got camp battles. We got the season coming. I'm ready to go.
Tell me who the starting quarterback at Auburn is going to be.
My gut instinct will be it'll start as Zach Calzada and it could end with Robbie Ashford. But I don't know. And I agree with your point. Like, we did our latest episode, of course, Fringe Element Podcast, all SEC football. We picked every over-under for every team, even with lines that we don't like. You know, for example, Kentucky at 8 or LSU at 7. I like the over for both of them, but I don't like the not without the hook there. I don't like it. I like the over on Auburn. Like, it's not difficult to make the case for how Auburn could be a very annoying football team for a lot of players, or a lot of teams, a lot of opponents, and they can get to 7 wins real easy. And I don't think, and that would, you know, that would hit the over. And I don't think, you know, the decision at quarterback, while I don't think any of them are spectacular, like I think, you know, Texas A&M's quarterback decision could change the course of the college football playoff. Missouri's quarterback decision to go to Brady Cook will not, as you alluded to, but and nor will Auburn's. But like that, they could beat some people this year. They've got a great offensive line and a great running back, a top 5 SEC defense, and a coach who's betting on himself to develop the quarterback, which is what the one thing we know he can do, supposedly. So I'm banking on Calzada being sort of the safe option. At first, it seems like they're going to, you know, the scrimmage tomorrow, it sounds like they're going to narrow it down to 2, maybe 3. It seems like the freshman out of Georgia, Holden, is not going to be a part of this, which is okay, but he's the guy who probably fits Harsin's system the best. But Ashford's the wild card to keep an eye on. I think you know what you got with Finley. You kind of know what you got with Calzada. I think Ashford's the wild card. If he comes in and sort of just progresses real quickly through the system, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the guy later in the year. But again, does that mean because it's struggling on the offense, or does that mean because he's just that good? That's the debate, right? Like, it's good for Missouri that Brady Cook was the guy and they decided so early, because when somebody makes it easy on the coach to decide, that's generally a good thing for your team. So that's what's going to be interesting, is it a good thing if Robbie Ashford develops and his talent is realized, or is it a bad thing for the Auburn offense? And that's sort of where I can't seem to settle just yet on what that position will look like.
It has been a rare thing, and I don't have any great insight. I think this is for a lot of people. There was something about quarterback where it has been a rare thing in my life for me to see a guy like play a little bit, and my sort of initial reaction over a game or two isn't really – I mean, as a quarterback, you got it or you don't. Am I being too hard? Because I've asked folks about this. T.J. Finley, everything he does is at this Jurassic pace. And it just does not work in the SEC. Yeah. He's this big, strong, smart leader, all this other stuff. I'm like, Red Bull, man. You know, shotgun a monster. Do something, because everything is so deliberate. And that just don't work.
No, and I would argue, for a very different reason, the same thing with Joe Milton at Tennessee. Like, I spent all summer last year trying to tell people. I do a hit every week with one of my friends on a show in Knoxville, and I was like, every single week, I was like, Joe Milton ain't the guy, y'all. Like, he's not it. And it's for a different reason. It's because the guy is not – he just throws the ball, like, 5 yards past every receiver he's ever thrown it to. And that's different. That's a different problem. But, like, I think your point is valid. When you look at someone play and you watch them and you just kind of go, I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, I'm not sure what is it the coaches are seeing in practice that we're missing in the games. Because obviously none of us are allowed to watch any practices anywhere, even though I can stand on the sideline of the Tennessee Titans camp and watch every single snap that Malik Willis takes in practice. I'm not allowed to watch, you know, we can't go watch, you know, Mike Wright and Ken Seals throw balls in practice for Vanderbilt. What is it that they're seeing?
I'm saying, Braden? I said, I used to coach football, my guy. I was like, folks, if they let media and fans, we wouldn't understand most of what we saw. We really would not. We would see 11 guys running around.
And what advantage, like, do you and I doing a show talking about so-and-so player at so-and-so school, like, is that all of a sudden going to give the opponent an advantage that week? Like, I don't – of course not. They're all just paranoid, schizophrenic, egomaniacs, and that's fine. That's what you need to be.
Control the message.
Right. It's what you have to be, frankly, to be an SEC coach. Yeah. Although I do think that's changing a bit. I think Billy Napier and Brian Harsin fall into that attention to detail category with Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. But there is this ball coach category, and now there's like a nerd category in the SEC, which is great. Like, you got Kiffin and Leach and Drinkwitz in this nerd category. You got Pittman and Stoops and Heupel and Beamer in sort of like this personnel psychology, just old ball coach category. And then you've got the attention to detail, you know, paranoid schizophrenic egomaniacs, which is, of course, all the ones winning championships. So, you know, Brian Kelly fits into that category. Napier fits into that category. I'd probably put Jimbo in there, although Jimbo kind of fits in his own category. You have to be that way to be great. But it doesn't mean you can't, like, I don't know. Like, I think players deserve more platform to tell stories, and I think fans especially boosters that pay tons of money and fans that pay extraordinary amounts of money to go sit in stands and season tickets and the whole deal. Like, I think you deserve more access to your team and to be a better fan and more informed and have more fun doing it. And I don't think it affects the outcome of any game ever. So,
you know, you said the nerd category, the detail category. I miss the Florabama category. Do you know what the Florabama is?
That'd be Mike Price, right? That's the Mike Price category.
Well, Ed Ogeron, Tommy Tuberville, Steve Spurrier. Like, this was a conference full of fun people. I don't know that they always made the best decisions, but am I right? I mean, like, Steve Spurrier, was the picture shirtless on top of an RV with the Coors Light at the race?
I agree.
That's
with you. I'm not sure, like, Tommy Tuberville and Steve Spurrier don't strike me as guys that are in the same category. Coach O is sort of a unique bird, too. Like, I wouldn't – like, Spurrier is different than those guys. Like, Spurrier is just literally every second of the day trying to have fun, doesn't want to recruit. Like, he just wants to play ball and coach ball and talk about ball and play golf. Like, Coach O and Tuberville, like, I don't know if those guys are in the same
category.
They
would be fun at the Florabama.
They would. I would argue that Coach O has probably had too much fun at the Florabama, but I think Spurrier's in a different category. His fun to me seems lighthearted, and right now Tommy Tuberville is completely insane, lost his mind, and can't beat UConn. So and Coach O's still employed by LSU because he's under investigation and potential litigation for some really bad stuff. So, like, I would not put those two in the same category as old ball coaches, harmless fun, poking at people, having a good time. Like, that is the kind of guy that I think that we miss in general. But, like, I don't – Sam, you know, Sam Pittman's a good, funny dude. Like, Lane Kiffin is that guy. Like, Lane Kiffin's kind of a nerd, but he also likes to poke fun on people on Twitter and – you know, we have a different media landscape, and that affects how people act.
No doubt about it at all. Last thing for you, Lane Kiffin. This is how I have decided to approach this, and it got kind of easy for me after this. I said, between Jackson Dart, Altmyer, Jackson Dart, I was like, okay, is Lane Kiffin, as a head coach, is he more about the quarterback ceiling or the quarterback floor? And I think he's about the quarterback ceiling, and that tells me Jackson Dart wins this. Am I way off?
I think your analysis of his thinking and your analysis of the two players is accurate. The problem is, I don't think Jackson Dart is accurate. that might be the issue.
The like player undoes it.
That offense needs to be one read, pressure the defense with angles, super quick decision making. You got to be real confident throwing, next to a linebacker and underneath the safety, real fast. And I don't know if Dart is accurate enough. I am actually one of the few people, like, I've got Ole Miss sevens in the West. Like, I may be dead wrong about this, and their schedule's real easy in the beginning half, but I wouldn't be surprised if they went, like, 1-5 down the stretch because their schedule is so hard and so backloaded. And I don't know if they've got the guy at quarterback. They also lost the single-season sack record holder, the star middle linebacker, and the best run stuffer on the defense as well. Oh, by the way, both coordinators are gone. Like, I don't think Ole Miss is a program that can just automatically lose all of that and be as good. So I think people are way overvaluing Ole Miss in general. They're pesky. They're annoying. They're going to beat some people. But if he doesn't make the – if Jackson Dart's the guy, he's super talented. He's the upside pick like you talk about. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he's accurate enough to run that offense as efficiently as Lane Kiffin wants.
Easy enough to follow him on Twitter. It's @BradenGall. Appreciate your time, man. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
All right, again, 440 Sports. That's him here on my ESPN Radio. Athlons as well, just good stuff there. And if Jackson Dart can expand on what he did in a little bit of a sampling at USC and then minus some of the turnovers, it can be an explosive offense again.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I saw the news yesterday, and I said, get David Lake on. Chuck Oliver Show on Friday. I was mentioning, like, my school got it right. I think Brian Harsin, my school's Auburn. Brian Harsin, among other coaches at other programs as well. But in particular, yesterday, Brian Harsin said, all right, we'll do it again. First five periods of practice, which not always the most revealing, but it's five periods. It's not nothing. And it's kind of been a regular thing. All right, media, y'all come on in for summer practice. And then all right, a couple of days later, all right, y'all come on in for summer practice. And then you blow the air horn or it's period five or whatever, and then you have to leave. But it's something. I think this happened. Mario is going to let the media in like the whole time. All right, everybody, y'all got pieces to post, so come on in. I was like, well, if Mario's letting people through the ropes, let's get David Lake on from InsideTheU.com. It is our favorite source for Miami information. David, how are you, brother?
Doing well, Chuck. Yeah, he surprised us, honestly, because normally it is like the first four periods, but Thursday was the first day in full pads, and we got surprised with being able to watch the whole thing. So got a lot of good context into what they're doing out there on Green Tree practice field.
Yeah, and as you said, first day in full pads, which is sort of a developmental thing now versus the old days where, you know, day one was two-a-days in full pads from the go. That's just not what it is. Tyler Van Dyke, we all got to eyeball him a lot last year. He's the starter, obviously. Tell me what you see from Jake Garcia and what you think the program has right now in him, because he may have to play at some point.
I think he's good. I think Miami's in the conversation of having one of the best starter backup combinations in the country in Tyler and Jake. I think Jake looks a lot more comfortable now than in the spring. I think if he has to go in and play, there's not really going to be much of a drop-off. Like if Tyler, God forbid, sustains an injury, I would not project Miami's record to take a total nosedive. So they got that quarterback room right, and Jake Garcia is a big part of that.
Not that he should figure into this year at all, but Ja'Kari Brown was a big name in recruiting. And so this that kid is in the 12-foot waters, imagine, you know, wondering what's going on. But what are the early indications about just what Miami may have there?
Yeah, I think he's 2 or 3 years away, which I think everyone expected a new coming in. Freak athlete. He ran 22.3 miles per hour on their GPS system this offseason. So one of the fastest guys on the team, 6'4", 215. Big arm, just has to refine the accuracy. And I think he'll get there in time. And luckily, with Miami's quarterback room, he's going to have plenty of time to improve his skill work.
Not quite as big. Jalen Knighton, he is atop the depth chart at running back. And I got to tell you that it's been a weird case with Miami. It seems to me, David, the past three, four, five, six seasons, I've liked like three running backs at Miami, but they don't all stay healthy and consistent and on the field. After Jalen, actually, tell me what you think about Jalen Knighton's season, if he's got that kind of body to be the one, the real one, and all the ways they use him, and then what's after him?
I don't know if he's going to be like a 20-carry guy, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think so. Last year in the second half of the season, he was the only healthy body in the running back room. And I think that hurt Jalen. A lot of inside run. That's just not his game. So I think in a way, like, less is more because he's so explosive. I think he could push for 1,000 yards this year. But he's going to be carrying – he's going to be shouldering the load with Henry Parrish, who comes from Ole Miss. I think those are clearly the top two guys. The number three is up for grabs. You got Thad Franklin, Don Chaney, who's coming back from a knee injury. And then talented freshman Trevante Citizen, who is the prettiest of the group. He's just a freshman that's got to earn it. But I do think he'll play at some point this year.
All right, speaking of pretty, that's Frank Ladson. He looks like he's a five-time Pro Bowler. But what kind of ball player do you think he is?
Yeah, I think he's a straight-line guy, kind of a downfield, stretch-the-field type. Maybe a one-trick pony type, but I think that's fine when you got a quarterback like Tyler Van Dyke who can push the ball downfield consistently. So I don't know if he's necessarily going to be like a number one receiver. I think that guy, if Miami does have one, is Keyshawn Smith, who was the third receiver last year. He started plenty of games last year. And now it's his time to kind of step up and try and be that number one. That's the big question mark for Miami in this camp is, do you have an above-average wide receiver room? Do you have a good wide receiver room? I'd be surprised if they have a great wide receiver room, but we'll see.
If we look on the offensive line, no disrespect to any of the guys who are healthy, but Zion Nelson has most of my attention because he's really, really, really good, and he's got a knee thing going on. What's up?
Yeah, so I think he'll miss. From what I've been told, I think he'll miss maybe the first two games, and they got that A&M game schedule circled in week three. We'll see. That might be still optimistic, but if he can't make that A&M game, then I think you move it back to the North Carolina game. They got a bye week before that game. I think it's like October 7th or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'll be ready to go by then. But, yeah, he's not out there practicing now. He had a little scope, a little arthroscopic scope in July. Or so. So he's working his way back from that. But honestly, like, Miami's O-line, like, their starters, even without Zion, they feel good about what they got there. And I do think they have some talented body types for Mario and Alex Mirabal to develop. So they honestly still feel like it's one of the strengths of the team coming into this year. And I wouldn't push back too much on that, honestly.
Wow, how about that? Were you in Orlando for that 19 opener against Florida when the line gave up?
Yep.
For you to talk about the offensive line the way you are right now, and I'm like, that was 15 minutes ago, and it looks totally different.
Honestly, Chuck, a lot of the guys that played in that game are still at UM. So that experience, you know, they were young pups back then in that Florida game, and they've just year over year gotten a little bit better. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's wild to say that going into a season about a Miami offensive line, but it really is. Yeah. It's going to be one of the strengths of the team.
All right, let's flip it over real quick. Defense with David Lake. Again, get him on Twitter, at DavidLake3. David Lake, the number three. He's publisher at InsideTheU.com. That means he knows Miami football. Defensively, just a couple of kids. I was told last year, I said, what about these two monsters off the edge Miami's got to replace? And I heard Jafari Harvey. Looks like a good enough kid, but he did not look like a 10-sack guy that could vault himself into the NFL. Not with last year. What can he be this season?
Yeah, we'll see. I think he's a guy with elite athleticism, but he's got to translate that to the field with his skill work and pass rushing technique. And we'll see. You know, Miami has Jason Taylor out there every day working with the guys as an analyst. So I think they're hoping some of his expertise rubs off on Jafari. And Miami also brought in Mitchell Agudé from UCLA, who probably will be the top defensive end on the team going into this year. So, you know, that moves Jafari back on the depth chart a little bit, which is probably where he should be, and will probably be best for the defense in general.
All right, last guy, Leonard Taylor. If you play on the interior of the line of scrimmage, either side, interior of the line of scrimmage in Power 5 football as a freshman, I'm kind of impressed with you. Tell me what you think about Leonard Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, he's supremely talented, but Miami hit the portal hard at defensive tackle. They brought in, I think, four guys that play defensive tackle, veterans. And so they're going to make a guy like Leonard earn it. And I think if he can raise his consistency level, which is always the thing with young guys, I think he can be special. He's definitely getting first-team reps out there. But the messaging from the coaching staff is, we just need you to be consistent. Because we all see the flashes, it's special, But down to down, he's got to bring it a little bit at a higher level.
I lied. One more guy. Keontra Smith, like, that's from a Jimmy Johnson defense from way back in the day. Is he really a linebacker? He's like 200 pounds.
He's now up to 230, but he is like 5'10", 5'11". I don't think it's, like, not Mario Cristobal's ideal weak side linebacker. This is kind of a situation of what he inherited. But he's in the mix. He's working with the second team, and he's part of the playing rotation. But linebacker is definitely the weakness of the team overall.
Nice.
Just not
tough
the
kid.
Body types. Yeah. Not the body types or athleticism you want there. So Mario's going to hit recruiting hard at that position.
David, it's great stuff, man. And congratulations. You got a full practice to be able to watch. That must have been awesome, man. I appreciate you coming
on. Thank you, Chuck.
All right. David Lake again, InsideTheU.com. Yeah, they got the whole practice. And he also had Mario had a bunch of former players out there as well. Now, here's the funny thing. Mario is a former player, so they've got that at every practice. Ed Reed's on staff. Ed Reed, he's the general manager, right? He's the GM of the program, I think. I'm trying to remember what his role is. But they had a bunch of the former players out there. And here's the interesting point about that. It surprises me every time. It is always a point of contention, or whenever you have an unpopular head coach on his way out, always look, and I'll say way more often than half, always look and see comments from previous great players. Now, sometimes guys are just bitter and taking a swing on the way out the door. But I've never understood how a head coach anywhere – you'd be head coach at Wofford. How do you not have a great relationship with all the former stars who maybe want to come back and see a Southern Conference? Dan, are they Southern Conference? Southern Conference game on a Saturday. How can you not have the great Wofford Terriers of all time back on a Saturday when they clash with, who would they play? Western Carolina or Furman. Why not have those great players back? I don't understand it. Miami, they never had us back. Well, who? Mark Richt, the former Miami quarterback? How did he not have a great relationship with the former players? What about Manny Diaz? What, the former guy whose dad was mayor of Miami and went there? That guy? Now, who doesn't have the relationship? Well, Mario was going out of his way, apparently. Jeremy Shockey, who I was always a big fan of Jeremy Shockey as a player. He was a different sort of individual, but... man. Tolbert Bain was a defensive back. You got to go way back. That was like Jimmy Johnson times. And again, Ed Reed is always there. So he had some of the players back, and that was a big deal as well. But because I throw myself in as well. When I say we don't understand most, that's not the point, is to figure out tendencies at practice. Do you know what the point at practice is? For instance, Zion Nelson, he's a senior now, and he's a left tackle, and he's really good. Well, he's not practicing because he has a left knee injury. Okay, well, who's practicing in his place? Okay, how do they look if this lingers into the season? Okay, what will Miami's pivot be if suddenly you look up and it's not week one, Bethune-Cookman? It's not week two, Southern Miss? Dan, you know where Miami is week three? Texas A&M. I don't know if Zion Nelson, if the knee thing lingering into the season, you can probably take care of Bethune-Cookman and Southern Miss. At Texas A&M, I call Miss deal. Hey, you're going on the road and you're minus your potential All-American left tackle. You're at Texas A&M. Have fun. Mm-mm. I don't like that. So I want to go out there. I want to see how we look at left tackle. You can see all of that. You can have such a good idea about an individual player and how he is performing, especially a defensive player. Do you know why a defensive player is easier? Because he has an individual battle he's supposed to win in almost every case. Offensively, it helps to know, and defensively, even what the coverage is and everything else. But for the most part, you don't need to figure out what the coverage is. And I was saying that because, well, he blew the coverage. Well, no, that wasn't really his guy. That's the only context for coverage. But you can see how a guy looks trying to win his individual battle. There is a lot of value and insight to how a guy looks that won't help the week one opponent in the least. I promise you. And so I said Brian Harsin earlier, for Mario Cristobal, for Lane Kiffin, for whomever is doing Lane, they're having a lot of scrimmages tomorrow. Brian Kelly, they're having a scrimmage tomorrow. The more access you allow, the better. Now, here's the curveball to everything I just said for the past 2 minutes. That idea I've told you about how schools want to bring some of the message, a lot of the message, most of the message, all of the message inside, in-house. They want to be the distributors of all of this. So it doesn't necessarily lend itself to inviting a bunch of outsiders in. So that is where I believe it's going. And I'm just going to pick an example that I believe in the future, just a random example. If you want the best South Carolina coverage, you don't go to the Big Spur, which is a good site. You don't go to, Heath Klein. You don't go to whomever. You go to GamecocksOfficialSports.com, and it's the school site, and the school has a media team. That's what it's headed towards. So when schools are doing this, what Mario's doing, for instance, y'all come on in, stay the whole time. We're not going to figure out any of the secrets almost certainly anyway. It's just really good insight, and it's a great way to connect to the fans. So, bully for him. We break, wrap up hour, and one next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
We had to make up for lost time, you know, putting a staff together, you know, in January and February, and you have a very short period of time to build those relationships. And I just think this is, you know, the continuation of those relationships starting to form. And I think we did a really good job.
Brian Kelly, he is the head coach, LSU. That late start, had to repair some situations, and we were able to do that. So good for him. And he's right about that when it comes to recruiting, he's talking. And so they're in camp just like everybody else. And I was talking about all the scrimmages coming this weekend where you'll have a lot better idea. Here is if you're a coach, and for instance, we talked, I think it was Monday or maybe Tuesday, when Eli said Brady Cooks was going to start. Brady Cook starting is not monumental news, and it may change a Saturday or two, but that's the best case. Like, maybe they do go into Auburn and win that game because Brady Cook is the right choice. So, or maybe they don't because Eli was off. But Eli, what was Monday? Like the 9th or so? The 8th? So, Eli, all right, first reps. We're back out on the field on Tuesday, and we got our one. Vantage him. You would like to get there, but if you aren't where Eli is, and has had now a full week with the one, you want to be there next Monday. And basically what I'm saying is you're going to scrimmage tomorrow and you want to, following the scrimmage, you'll go watch all the tape of the scrimmage you were just at yourself as a coach, and you'll meet with the staff, I don't know, 9 a.m. on Sunday, and you'll meet all day and you'll watch films and you'll maybe have a walkthrough. You'll do whatever you do. But you really want to come to practice on Monday with a starter. You really want to do that because then it gives you a week, and then it gives you game week, and it's just a real good thing to get that squared away. Now, it's more important to get it right. So that's what so many of these guys are looking to do, and that's Brian Kelly as well. I think I'd mentioned to you that it was Matt Moscona who said he thinks it's going to be a miracle if Miles Brennan is able to win the job at this point. That it has been a very rough first couple of weeks out, the week and a half of practice out there. So he had another shot at it yesterday. There are questions with LSU. Again, getting quarterback settled is the one that we all talk about, and we should. Getting the secondary and specifically the corners, and I don't want to say settled, but figuring out who they are and what the depth is. Folks, cornerback depth is, that is something. Are you kidding? August 12th, there's nothing. That's a camp story. No, not in the SEC, not in 2022 in college football. The way that you've got to start three corners and play like five or more. So building that depth, especially with so many transfers in, it is a big deal. And so the early returns, I'm going to skip because they're practice reports, they're camp reports. But in particular, I told you that Miles Brennan, that's a camp report. He's not looking good. Secondary, they're starting to find some answers. And I will mention just one kid, Seven Banks, the transfer from Ohio State. They wanted to see that kid on a field and running around like pain-free, full-ish speed, et cetera. He's been cleared like medically, physically. Yes, all right, yeah, he can go run around there and he's not – at more risk of being hurt because he hasn't recovered yet. Like, he is cleared yet. Now, I can't tell you. This is the doctor, the orthopedist. Can't tell you how good he's going to be. But everything works fine, and we're not sending an injured kid out there and putting him in harm's way. So he's cleared. Now it's up to the kid. See, that's where you are with Seven Banks, and they don't have any answers for that yet. But he's out there kind of running around looking good. Dan, how are you?
Well, it's kind of weird also, too, to think of LSU having questions in the secondary. Like, isn't, like, if any place on the field is supposed to not have questions, that's the one. Like, over the years, wide receiver becoming a thing at LSU, that was something that probably goes back to Josh Reed, Michael Clayton really getting it going, and people most recently think of having Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry out there for good reasons, though. But, I mean, it just also goes to show you the roster overhaul that Brian Kelly is trying to undergo right now at this moment. One guy, too, I don't think we talk enough about in terms of dealing with the same issues that Brian Kelly is dealing with is Billy Napier, because he started to see his recruiting efforts start to pick up as well. And I want people to actually listen to what Brian Kelly had said right there. And I think Billy Napier probably has said something very similar as well about kind of being behind the eight ball here, because you don't really think about it that these other programs that have their coaching staffs in place, maybe you do have some turnover on the off-field staff, maybe a couple of coaches leave, but for the most part, the core is there, so you know what you're getting. Billy Napier is having to build the core as they go. It's almost kind of like being shot up into space and kind of building the spaceship as you're getting out into orbit. And that's something that new coaches have to deal with. That's why that first year there is a little bit of catch up. There is a little bit of having to kind of reintroduce yourself to people, because there's no doubt Billy Napier has been in these high school hallways and talked to these high school coaches. That's not the issue. The issue is, what does it look like there? That's what you have to sell me on, and that's what these coaches have to do kind of on the fly.
Absolutely, and it, when you say on the fly, it's the 5 weeks or so, in some cases 4 weeks, between the end of spring practice and that, you know, portal window. It's getting kids in that maybe you have never even seen in person before on a practice field in August and getting them acclimated.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballou here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.